And this is September the 2nd, 1961, and this is Frank Young and Andrew Wicken and Harry Hughes. And we're at 95 miles on the Circle Highway. Now, Frank, you mentioned about a farmer that attempted to set up a ranch here. Will you tell me about this farmer here and what this land is we're looking at?
Well, right along here, right along the highway here, we're looking down into a valley of mostly cleared by nature, and a lot of fine grazing land for, I should think, for cattle. And some many years ago, some people from I think they were from New York State that come up in here hunting, and they come on the idea of promoting a cattle raising venture here. And they started, I think, about 1912 or 14 to build in a corral here where they were going to bring these cattle in. And as the years rolled on, why, the venture didn't materialize, but it's a very beautiful spot here to sit here in this car and look out into this valley on such a nice day as this.
In that year, there was no automobiles in here.
Oh, no automobiles in here then. That was nothing but the old Circle Trail that went through here. That went mostly kept up on the ridges, but come down through this part of the flats here, and then it hit in over on the 12 mile and over the ridges to Fairbanks Creek, about 25 miles from Fairbanks.
Frank Young went through here as a very young man, and he's describing what happened here 40 and 50 years ago when he was a kid in this country. And he's shown us some of the visible signs of the old trail here. What do you think of this, Andy?
I think it's a grand view from here. And I think someday that this Circle Trail should be re-established by somebody. Maybe the Historical Society.
It would be a very interesting thing, and would be a historical and a tourist attraction to reestablish this trail with markers of incidents that happened along this trail at some time in the near future. This is the end of this portion of this stop. We'll continue on our trip. This is our next stop on our trip to Circle City and to the Hot Springs on the Seas Highway. And this is Andrew Wicken and Harry Hughes and Frank Young. We're stopping at Central House, is this?
Central Lodge.
Central Lodge. And what are you folks' name?
Dell and Henry Choate.
Dell and Henry Choate, the owners here since 1953?
We got this year. 9-2. We just started this in May this year.
They've just started the roadhouse in May.
They've had it here before, but we just took it this year. Henry's cousin is the one that's the owner, Matt Lawler.
This is our private secretary. We record.
Well, this is Del and Henry Choate. And we had Bill Waters was here, and when this fellow that was going across the country with the horses, and he was watching to see them pack up to get ready to leave. And so my husband, Henry helped him to put the packs on. He didn't quite understand how to hook the packs onto the saddles. And so Bill stayed here. He'd hold the horses, and he was out there working just like mad, you know, and he was getting a real big kick out of it. So then pretty soon, this fellow finally got everything ready to go, and we said, well, we was glad to help him, and we got some mosquito repellent, you know, for him, because he didn't have any. And so then this Bill Waters, he took some equipment over to Circle Springs for him to send off to his wife. And then he came back and asked about fishing, and Henry sent him over to Circle City to see, but he told him to be sure and find out before he went in there to ask the Frank Warren.
He was actually inexperienced on living out in wild country.
Well, he was from Kentucky, but of course maybe he was from the hills. I don't know.
This is Frank Young, and we're from Igloo Falls, Pioneers of Alaska.
Nice to meet you, sure. And so then we told him to be sure and see Frank Warren over at Circle City before he took out to go to his lake. And then he was certainly real interested when he put him, and when they said he was lost, we felt real bad about it. And then when they found him, Henry went over to Circle Springs and seen him when they brought him back in.
Mm-hmm. He was pretty sick boy.
Yes, he was. Mm-hmm. Henry said he was real thin, said he would have never recognized him at all. But And he didn't talk to him because he figured he wasn't in any condition to talk.
He wasn't in very good physical condition.
He was rather weak, but still he seemed very much alert, you know, too. His mind was...
He still knew what was going on.
Yes, He was real... well, he come in and he wanted to set everybody up with a drink, you know. I guess he was so glad to be back in civilization. But it was real... We was real thrilled to think that they did find him, you know, after that many days, but that was quite an ordeal, and I survived it, maybe.
Thank you, Mrs. Delfino.
Take what you want. This is July 2nd, 1961. September 2nd, 1961. On our trip to Circle.
I'm calling him over here.
No, go ahead.
We're at Central Alaska. Two other old pioneers and myself. You'd have to excuse me calling you old because I'm kind of a... I classify myself as an old man, but I guess we're all as old as we feel, so... pardon the remark, but I was across the way to an old pioneer by the name of George Parker that I've known for many, many years. I knew George when he first came into the country. And I was over there and I mentioned the name of Harry Hughes, just as I knew Harry many, many years ago. And I mentioned the name of Andy Wicken, and he said he couldn't place Andy, but he knew Harry.
I was just a
cheese. Well, I don't know about the cheese, but he just didn't happen to run. And you fellows passed, just didn't happen to cross, and he probably never met you, but he was glad to say a few words to you. And I hope we get together and do a little reminiscing, because I've known, as I said before, George many, many years, and we can get into some of the old...
What's your next stop, Frank?
Next stop, well, Circle City on the Yukon, I guess.
Okay, well, let me
turn the phone.
This is Andy Wicken at the Central. We're visiting here with a charming lady from California. She's been here now for 10 years. And she was pumping gas, and she's got a lot of muscle. Her name is...
Del.
Del Schultz.
Okay,
I'll turn
that's the game, because I'm not... They call the boy. Remember when they call the boy.
Say, here, you introduce this gentleman. My name's Roy Olson, and I'd like to introduce Gene Langlow from Switchgrid. He's down here visiting at Central at my place, and we are being interviewed by Frank Young, Harry Hughes, and Andy Wickens.
Pioneers and from Igloo 4.
From the Pioneers, Igloo 4, Fairbanks. Now, Gene... Would you tell us how you came to Circle City?
Well, I can tell you that easy, because I was in Dawson, you know. I went to Dawson in 1900, you see. And then we stayed up there. Well, we stayed up there quite a few years. And my brother-in-law, he owned Twelve El Dorado. That is the lower half of Twelve El Dorado.
El Dorado. Yeah.
And they were coming in that year to finish up the works, you know, because they didn't think there was much left in it. They already taken out hundreds of thousands of dollars out of the property, you see. But they thought they'd get some more out of it. So I went in with them, and they brought in a team of horses, and they brought in a boiler, a small boiler, and a china pump, which they made up there. China pump, you know, the pump boiler. And so I stayed with them, you know, for quite a while, you know. And then finally when they left, you know, they took out, they didn't take out much that year, only 70,000 that year, you see.
What year was it? Excuse me, Gene.
That was in
1901.
And then I had a partner there, you know, a fellow named Owney, he was an Orbian too. And so he thought, you know, after they left the property in charge of Erickson, Montana, really, which was the richest man on El Dorado, you know, at that time, you know, awful rich, you know. They must have taken about $2 million there on that property, you know, at least. And Gus Erickson was in charge, see? And then so they wanted to buy the property, which it wasn't worth much then after that, you know, because it was supposed to be worked out altogether. But then We consulted Gus, you know, and he said, well, he says, you are a relative of the Langlers. He says, well, you can have it for $4,000. And that's the way it was. We bought it for $4,000. And we worked with them for a couple of years. Well, is this all you want to know, or is it... you want the whole story?
Gene, how about the trip down the Yukon?
Yeah, wait now. I'm going to... how long can you keep on?
We got 12 minutes yet.
12 minutes? Oh, heck, I can do that in 12 minutes.
Okay.
All right, you hold this right here now, Gene, then, and talk.
Well, I think I... Hold it.
Listen, let's get your full name and where you're born.
Huh?
Your full name and where you were born.
I was born... Jens Langlo is my name. I was born in Norway, see?
What town in Norway?
Well, it's Ålesund. It's Stranda, really, but...
Stranda, Norway?
Stranda, you see, but Ålesund is my... Ålesund, there's...
When you come to United States, where did you enter? New York?
I entered... Yeah, sure.
You come to New York?
New York.
And then what caused you to come on up to Alaska from there?
Well... I'll tell you, that's what I was going to tell you, I never get that far, see. My brother-in-law then decided that, you know, he was going back, you see, and finish his work, you see. And he married my sister. Although we were related, you know. But not much related, you know, kind of second cousin, see. He married my sister, Olina. And so he wanted me to come along, see, to Yukon. That's the way it happened. And then we started out, across the North Sea, of course, and went on different steamers, you know. We landed in New York, and then finally we got to Seattle, you know, over the northern. I think it was northern. No. No.
There was the Northern Pacific.
Great Northern. Went over the mountain, see.
Great Northern Railroad.
Mm-hmm. And then we landed in Seattle. And of course, Seattle was nothing then, you know.
What year was that,
Steve? Well, that was in 1898. Mm-hmm. And when we got to Seattle, you know, even the hotels there, you know, they had wooden steps up from the sidewalk up to the, you know, like that, you know. And we stopped there, you know. And then, finally, we got the passage, you know, going down the river. And we went down on, if I remember right, it was the Nora. Well, I think there was alphabetical, you know, Nora A and Nora B and Nora so on, but it was Nora anyway.
Steamship.
We went to
Nora. Nora A and Nora B. I remember those.
Yes. We went down. And we landed in, Skagway. We landed in Skagway, and that's the time that the railroad was just starting, you see. And they hadn't finished it. So we were quite a bunch of us, you know, from that same part of the country, and we started afoot. The next day, you know, we started. We don't used to stay there and pay big money, you know, and we thought we'd walk over the hill, see. And we walked the rails. There was a rails across, you know. There was really, you can walk the rails, you know.
Yeah, between the mountain sides.
And then we got out to, what's that like?
The barge?
Lenderman. No. Bennett, I guess.
Lake Bennett, I think.
It's Lake Bennett. I'm pretty sure it's Lake Bennett. And went across on a little ferry there, something like that. And then after that, there was no road. So we...
Will you hold it a second while I put another tape on you? I can't hear you.
Well, it's the second part of this.
Where were we? We're going up the hill from Skagway.
Yeah.
Going across the lake.
And after we got across Bennett, then, of course, there was no more roads. There was nothing but teams, you know, or grain roads there and everything. And so we got a ride on the teams, you know, to get into Whitehorse, see? Then we got into Whitehorse. And then off the White Horse, then that is where we got on the steamer that I'm telling you about. There's Nora something. I don't know if it was Nora something. Anyway, it was one or two or B or something. But anyway, we got down and we went down the river and everything was fine down the river, and we got down to Dawson on the 1st of June. On the 1st of June, we got on to Dawson. And that was in 1900. And then, of course, my folks went over the trail, you see. That is Louis Langlo and all that layout, you know, went over the trail, in the winter. And they were all there, see. And so I went out in the creeks and I started work and, you know, I had to start like a common laborer, which I always was. I was just a common laborer. And I worked with them then for that year. But they claimed they weren't. Well, I'll tell you. That's one thing I want to tell you. Miss Lou Langley was there. And they had this China pump I was telling you about a while back. Mm-hmm. And they started to sink a sump pool 8x8, you know, 8x8. And you know, she started panning, and you know, that's the richest piece of ground that I guess ever found.
On El Dorado?
Yeah, Mrs. Louie Langlo, she panned out, she had rubber gloves on, and she panned out $1,000 in the pan.
$1,000 to pan? In
that sump hole, she panned out $13,000. Now, nobody believes that. Mm-hmm. Nobody believes that. Of course, she panned out practically everything of it, but then, I was in the dump box, and you know, when that dirt was dumped in the dump box, you know, it was nothing but yellow gold all over.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, everywhere, see? It was exciting, see? But then pretty soon I got over that, you know, I realized that I was in the gold camp, and you know, you had to expect a little gold, you know, and stuff like that, see? And then finally, that year they had 12 men working for them, and I guess they must have taken out 150 or 200,000, but they claimed they made only 70,000, and they didn't think that was worth, you know, bothering with it. So we bought the property, see. That's why Gert Sayers is coming again, you know. You know, he had a charge of it, and he told me, he said, Yancey is my name, you see. Mm-hmm. Yancey says, if you want that ground, he says you're going to have the 4,000. Well, I didn't have the 4,000, but this John Allen, I was telling you about a while ago, why, he had enough to, so we bought the ground. Well, we kept the ground there for 50 years. We made a little money on it. Of course, not a great deal. Of course, I was kind of reckless, you know. I spent a lot of money, you know. You went out to Dawson, to Grand Forks, you know, Grand Forks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, $100 in the night, you know, it was really nothing then, you see. You weren't spending money if you didn't spend only $100. Of course, which I couldn't afford to spend, you see. Mm-hmm. Never could. But then finally, I sold the ground for $4,000 to a fellow in the hospital there in, McNamara, I think his name was. He was in the hospital then in Dawson. That is a charge hospital.
McNamara?
Something like that. I'm not sure. Mm. Now, but it was so long ago, you know. And he bought it for 4,000, so we got our money back, and we had about 10,000 apiece then, you see.
Mm-hmm.
But then, of course, you know, that didn't last very long, you know.
Not when you get around town.
Well, and then I spent a little more time there, you know. I went over on Dominion and represented them ground, and I was fooling around, you know. I was in Granville on Goldstream and stuff, and then I started down.
Coming to this country, huh?
Then we started down on the university.
What time, excuse me, Mr. Langlo, what year did you land in Circle here, Circle City on the Yukon?
Well, that was in 1905.
1905. And you come out, did you come out to Deadwood Creek in that year?
What year did you get on the creek that you're
well,
on now?
Well, I'll tell you. I came down in the circle in 95. Then I walked right out. You know, there was just a footprint.
That was Jens.
J-A-E-N-C.
S.
J-E-N-S-L-A-N-G-O-W.
No.
Hmm?
Lang Low.
Lang as in Lang.
L-O-W.
Lang Low.
Okay. L-A-N-G-L-O-W.
Lang Low.
An old timer in Circle City has been here from 1915 or 1916 to 1961 continuously and is mining his own ground, worked all alone. And this little interview was taken by Frank Young, Andrew Wicken, and Harry Hughes on our trip to Circle City on September the 2nd, 1961.
We're making a stop here at the Birch Creek Bridge on the Spies Highway, and what mile is this, anyhow? We're about 150 miles from Fairbanks now.
Not that far, Harry.
148 was right back there.
Well, then we are only a few miles from Circle, but I thought that we was... pardon me for interrupting you, but I didn't see the milepost.
We're back there 148 with that.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Pardon me.
We're having a little lunch here on the bank of the river, and it's beautiful sunshine, and there's beautiful trees here. And this river's flowing. It's fairly... not too high of water. It's getting late in the fall, it's September the 2nd, 1961. And we'll rest up a little bit and we'll move on to the next stop. Well, this is 5:45, September the 2nd, 1961, at Circle City, looking on the Yukon River. And this is Frank Young, Andy Wicken, and Harry Hughes. And Frank Young is going to describe what we've done here on the Pioneer Land, homestead.
We've been down here at this time looking over the the homestead of Henry Appel that was willed to the pioneers of Alaska, and we found everything to be taken care of in pretty good shape by a native family by the name of Roberts that lived here at Circle. And We come to the conclusion for the good care that this lady is taking care of the place that we should compensate her in some way with a few dollars, which we intend to do. We are now standing on the banks of the Yukon here at Circle, and Andy Wicken, our sidekick here, is down trying to become a sourdough.
He's completed one part of it.
That's about all I have to say at this time, Harry.
The articles and items that were found around the Appel cabins and cache, there were several small items that we picked up and hoped to save for a future deposit in the museum, such as an old coffee grinder and several lanterns. There's two lanterns that the fire department could use on the old Fairbanks fire truck that they're restoring for historical piece, and I, Harry Hughes, would suggest that the firemen be either loaned these lanterns or given to them to install on that old rig. And let's see, what else do we have that we picked up? Oh, there's one old candle lantern here that's very ancient, that would be a very important historical piece to put away and preserve and get some history on. And then there's a group of pictures which we are bringing back with us that we will place in some type of display so that friends of Henry Appel will be able to see some of his collection of old pictures. They're not too important, although there is two early day tintypes that were probably way back in the 1890s that might be important as historical pieces. This is the end of this portion of the tape. We're going to move on down to Frank Young Jr.'s cabin from here.
Well, we stopped along the highway between Circle City and Central, and
no fish, no rabbits, and we're down at Frank Young Jr.'s cabin. And we're looking for a place to sleep tonight. So, nothing further to report at this point of the trip.
All right, this is September the 3rd, Sunday morning. And Frank Young and Andy Wickham slept in the cabin next door to Frank Young Jr.'s cabin here at Central. And I slept in the car. I had a very good night. I kept around 70 to 80 degrees in the car. I got about 7 hours good sleep. There was only two or three cars that woke me in the night. And Andy Wickham promised to get up and have fish for breakfast. Well, Andy forgot to get up. So I went over and woke him about 10 minutes after 4 when it started to get daylight. And along about 5:30, they got over to the bridge on Crooked Creek. So Andy's now looking for fish. So I don't know whether we're going to eat this morning or not. But if we're not able to eat, we're going to move on down the line someplace else after that. What do you think about this, Frank?
Well, I think that Andy is a very good fisherman, and if there's any fish in the creek, he's going to get them. So I think we just kind of hold tough for about a little while longer. We're going to have fish for breakfast.
Okay, that's all to report at this moment. All right, Andy, you're back from your fishing trip and it started to rain.
It wasn't a good hole there, and I had a hole of several big ones, but they all got away, and as soon as the sun comes out again, I'm going back there and get some fish so that the boys can have breakfast. It may not be for a few days or months, but they're going to get it.
Well, now we're down at, Parker's place here?
George Parker's place,
and Frank just returned the lantern we borrowed last night. He's using the cabin, and it's raining again. So everybody's asleep around here, so I guess we'll move on down towards where, Frank?
Towards Miller House.
George Miller House will be next, probably, down towards the summit again. Okay, we'll move on from here. 6:30 a.m., and we're moving on down to Miller House. No, that's Seward. This is Frank Young, Andrew Wickham, and Harry Hughes, and we've just had a wonderful breakfast at Miller House, and Mr. and Mrs. Miller are in here visiting with us right now after breakfast. And we're showing Mr. Miller some pictures of Dawson, and maybe he'll give us a little story on the tape after a while. We'd like to ask him a few questions.
Well,
I'm past 83.
Well,
that didn't mean that you
did, oh. No, sure. Where were you born, Mr. Miller? Born in Southern Kentucky. Southern Kentucky? Mm-hmm. Yeah, these kids come around there. 50, 60 year olds, no more
humps over. This is Harry Wood's wife.
Hey, dear, oh, yeah, Frank, why didn't you bring
it
along?
What are
you
afraid of? She's
down in Texas. Oh. That's right
here.
Yeah. Frank, I'll
leave you a nice picture. Well, I got a better one to show you. Frank will have to tell you about it. Put in order again. I've written on the back of every one of these, so I'd have some identification.
Wait, I've got to get my pipe. Holy smoke, I'm nervous.
I lost mine, so I'm out of luck. I left it after a rabbit down there. They saw a rabbit there, so I hung a rabbit. They wanted me to run the brush, and I did, and I dropped it.
There's no old corn cobs around. You can't make one.
No. Oh, if I get a whole piece of knot someplace, I could whittle one out, but it takes time. I've used them out of a knot. Whittle one out.
Such a thing on this ground for security if I get the story.
and they're mining it today, and they're taking out big money. They had a $200,000 cleanup over there about a month ago. And this was the pictures of it.
Well, who's working, you know? Carl?
Carl Parker?
Is that the guy who's Carl's room? Well, he was just talking about cutting it for a while.
Well, it's almost run out, and he's finished the pocket.
Harry,
right at the end of it.
Did you? You told me $200,000?
Yeah.
Harry was there. I wasn't over there, you know.
I estimated $70,000, and Bob Bloom told me he says nearer $200,000.
You figure Bob.
Well, there was 160 pounds in the two boxes and five pails that packed away. Now, you figured that out.
Show us the pictures out of there.
Well, there's the pictures of them. I took movies and everything.
You just hit a pocket.
Mm-hmm. That's all. You see, they worked the right limit in the early days. And then when F.E. backed out of there with their goods, they left it. Well, this was over on the left limit. See, the pay run back and forth, and he hit a pocket on this side. I took pictures of the face where they'd been working.
Well, who are for Carl? I don't know.
I'm glad he made something.
Well, that's up the creek looking towards Esther,
yeah. Yeah.
That's where the big drag line works, way back over there. You know where that big hole
is?
Yes,
I was out there,
By the way, Grace Fisher has some ground to join Bob over on the other side there.
What? Near Carl? On Eva?
Yeah, just the other side, yeah. Torch Sheep Creek on the other side of the hill.
Oh, that's a way down, though.
Yeah, it's only about 2.5 miles through the hills of where her place is.
Well, Goldstream, her ground is on Goldstream. Yeah. That's a mouth of
that. That's quite a way, Harry.
Oh, yeah.
She said to join Bob's yesterday. Mm-hmm.
I know where Sheep Creek is. I prospected when the Stallions first came in and was picking up the ground. Those fellows there below Moose Creek and Sheep Creek had ground on Goldstream. I was out there in charge of a prospecting bunch. Mm-hmm. I know where her ground is.
Well, it is. Well,
they had two claims there at the mouth of this creek. What the heck is the name of that creek?
Not there. Water did. Spinach Creek, California.
No,
creek.
No, wait a minute. Oh.
Hi.
No,
Mr.
Hi
there, how are you?
Fine.
You know Andy working here?
Mary Francis has been mining over there at church on this particular creek. He comes in right on water's ground. I tell you, I believe Walter had one claim at the mouth of this creek, and then he had a claim on his boat. Wait, I'll tell you this. Lepso, do you remember Lepso?
Oh, yeah.
Lepso had some ground right in there close. He was doing representation work for Grace. He had a claim, I believe, on this creek. Where Harry Francis mined there, and then this, got his name on the book over there. He's a mechanic. Automobile mechanic. It's below Sheep Creek.
Below Sheep Creek.
Yeah. Gosh, I can't think of the name of that
ship.
Yeah, well, I do too.
I can't think of anything.
You
know.
Oh, that fella?
Yeah.
He's part of the family. Yeah, he's the boss. That's Smokey.
That's Smokey.
Well, folks, you're welcome. I got a bunch of hobos here. I got to watch. Or I'd wait on you.
I got him interested in some pictures with you.
Well,
Dawson and Fairbanks and so on.
Mm. Yeah.
That's the only way they can visit it, by photograph.
Yeah.
You can
leave
the roadhouse.
Just
a bunch of old
equipment
that they take.
Yeah, well, by God, that's good. Travis, here a long way. That's what it is, 3, 4 years ago. 5 years ago.
That's the clean out part of it. I'm going to get ready for it.
God. The only thing we saw is a little bunch of
nice pictures.
Mm-hmm. Very wonderful picture.
It's gold.
Yeah. 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 Is that gold?
That's right.
Holy smoke.
I thought it was
that enough. It's a 200,000.
Oh, God. I found out a couple of years ago.
I don't see how I could have held those boxes.
No? Well, I don't know.
Michael lost them. He just couldn't get that much in a string of boxes without losing.
Oh,
they lost
some.
But they did.
Concentrate
down, yeah. I don't know. It couldn't possibly hold up in an ordinary string of boxes that much money.
No, I've never seen that.
Mm-hmm.
This is
This is Boswell, Jack Boswell and Bob Bloom. Jack Boswell's in for FE Company because they have the lease on the ground. Bob owns the ground.
Okay. Oh, look the old Bob. Yeah. Bob?
And there's the boy lifting that pail. You don't think those white pails were heavy? Five of those white pails and two big boxes. But the next cleanup was only a fraction of that. A little small.
Well, they'd better work your turns, because I tell you, they can't hold out much in a string of boxes that I know of.
No, I'll show you that. Here's the next stack that they stacked up to shove through the box, right behind there. Mm-hmm. Well, they estimated they got about 18,000 out of that pile when they washed it down. So you can see what a drop off they had.
How can I wait on you folks now? I can take my eyes off of these.
September 3rd at Miller House, Alaska. And I met an old-time Alaskan raised in Alaska by Mr. McDonald. And he will introduce himself on here and tell his name.
Where are you
going? My name is Joe McDonald. I was born and raised in Leak Lake in Cordova, around Big Arm. Well, we just happened to talk about the old roadhouse here at Miller House. I was talking about the Sullivan Roadhouse. That used to be over at McKinley Park. When we faded in there, there was the Malamute Kid, the Dago Kid, the Spanish Kid, and John Schoen, and myself. And I don't just remember who had the other roadhouse. That's before the railroad was put in.
It wasn't Singleton or... Singleton's old roadhouse.
Singleton, yeah. Singleton, I believe the name was.
Jack Singleton.
Mm-hmm.
And people by the name of Warner took it over afterwards.
Afterwards, you know? Yeah, but that was afterwards.
And after that was Andrew Dragich.
Yes, Dragich.
The trapper from the cantina.
Yeah.
And Andrew built a five-story roadhouse at Middle River one time, hoping the road would go through
that. Yeah, but it never did.
And they went through McKinley Park instead.
Yeah, they went the other way. Mm-hmm. Cut right around him.
You remember old John Calvin the trapper and...
Very well.
Otto the Finn that lives up on the side of the hill
Yes, I know him too.
Mm-hmm. And let's see who else is around there. Old Sherman was trapping around there for a while. And there used to be a fellow by the name of Bill Henry.
Hobo Bill. Oh, yes.
Yeah, Hobo Bill.
Yes, sure.
He was early days. Yeah. He was a kleptomaniac in Fairbanks one time.
Well, I don't know what
they
was.
They ran him out of town and he wound up there at the mine, by the mine.
But he used to take everything. He was like a pet rat, but he never put nothing in place of it.
No, he'd always help himself and take it home.
Yeah, that's all.
Well, I knew Bill Henry a long time.
Did you know the old Neck and Swede used to be over on Clear Creek?
No, I didn't know him.
Huh? Oh, yeah, he had a big house up there. He built a three-story house up there, you know. He was up there for years, Adelaide, during the war, of course. He was machine gun and everything else, you know. And he moved, of course, he died down in that Swedish hospital in Seattle. But George Nelson, you must have known.
I know the name.
Yeah, good big old Swede. You know.
I used to meet little Robbie up there, and Kosky and Barlow.
Oh, yes. Well, Barlow, he's over in Sitka, isn't he?
No, they took him to the States.
Oh, they took him outside, huh?
Mm.
That's a tough old man.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that old Charlie Maine?
Charlie Maine, yeah. Val Diebold.
Oh, boy.
Tom Savage and his family down there.
Yeah. Well, they're all gone, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, Pop Hollis is still down at Healy, the old man that and his wife runs the post office at Healy. He's quite old. His family's all grown up and married.
Did you say Tom Savage?
Yeah, I know Tom.
Well, you
said about Tom. Now this is Mr. Miller. He's going to tell us about Tom Savage here.
Oh no, not for no.
He used to load the coal from the right away then.
Tom was guided from the
Andy.
Oh, you can't do that.
Not so loud. So we're trying to take
this. Tom was guide for the survey bunch. He worked from Broad Pass towards Fairbanks and started at Nenana. And old Bacon was the engineer in charge. He was an old. Great Northern engineer, ran along in the 60s at the time, and he was one of the chuck old engineers. He knew his business. Well, Tom was to be guide. Well, Bacon was ready to pull out of the outfit, and Tom had to go celebrate, of course, before he started. And it's about 3 days before they'd get him sober enough to start out. So Tom and I started up the Nenana there, walking across, and the pack train and all the output was to come, and they'd shipped a lot of pack stock from the States, mostly mules, and new to the country. Well, we got up along the Nenana there quite a ways, and we were ahead of the outfit. They'd been tied up for some reason. And, of course, Tom was getting over this drunk, and he felt awful bum, and the mosquitoes were something awful. And Tom found one of these rolled oat sacks, you know, about 10-pound sacks. And he pulled it over his head, and then cut eye holes in, you know, and the corners stuck up like this, down on his neck. And he crawled over in the brush. He says, "I'm going to take a nap, and you here, and you wake me up." But I stayed out on the trail, and pretty soon, along come the pack tramp. I called to him once, you know, and he'd opened his eyes and went back to sleep again. They got up pretty close, then I yelled at him, and he come out of the brush on the run on the pack train. These mules was not over, 30, 40 feet from him, and by golly, he come out with this sack over his head. He was a horrible looking sight, you know, and those mules just went in every direction across that big flat. It took them about two hours or more to gather up their pack train, and Tom was standing there in the trail. But of course, he did a good job there on up, and we worked together. There was an old Frenchman that was the rear flag for the Chancellor, man. And the three of us were the only ones that had been in the country. They brought all this band of fellas from the States, all greenhorns, pretty doggers, nice bunts. But we got along fine that summer. Old Bacon seemed to kind of take a liking to us, and we got along with him fine. I was recorder for the topographer, you know, and I was about the only one that did have a lazy job. But Tom was an axeman and a guide at that. He filled his bell. Well, we got by. This is an awful long story, our experiences that summer. But that fall, Tom and I wanted to go sheep hunting after we got back to Nenana, long in latter September sometime it was. Well, we first went up to that Lincoln Flats, and we stayed up there a week or two, and then made up our mind to go over what is McKinley Park now. So we beat it over in there. We went up to a little below Healy there, Dry Creek, and cut over the hill down onto... Tom had a cabin there on Savage Fork, the middle river. There yet, I
guess. That's about 14 miles over from the railroad today.
Yeah, well, I don't remember the exact distance. But we went up over the hill and over to his cabin, and then went over to Sanctuary Creek,
mm-hmm.
below that cabin there, in the line of his cabin.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill Himes and the Hungry Kid caught up with us. And the four of us together were over there. Well, Himes and the Hungry Kid were going to trap in there. Well, Tom and I was going to hunt, but we built a cabin right there on Sanctuary Creek. And I hear the old cabin is there yet, repaired, but there's still a cabin down in there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then we hunted. We got along fine, and Bill and the Hungry Kid went up further over on Tokeland. And we figured our grub. We pulled a fast one. There was two fellows. You know, during the summer, one of the packers, he was hijacking. He'd come out there in the old Fisher Roadhouse. It was abandoned at that time. It was about 30 miles out from Nenana. And he'd made a cache under part of the floor that left, this packer. And every trip out, he'd pick out a little stuff out of his loads, you know, and cache it in this hole under the floor. Well, we got wise to that. And so we went over, and there's two fellas that was going up Nenana. They were wise to this cash business, so the four of us talked to together. Well, now, said, when we come out this fall, if we're short of grub, we know where there's some left. Well, these two fellas come out about 2 weeks ahead of Tom and me, and they raided this cash. They cleaned it out.
Mm.
So when we come out, you know, we expected to pick up a little grub there, and we found this cash gone. Well, Tom said, we'll find where the SB's cash is stuck. And we started to circle around the place. Now, he says, it'll be up in a tree. You can figure on that. It won't be on the ground. So we circled, and finally we spotted it, hanging up in three trees. They put it in gunny sights, you know, and got it up out of sight. But he knew where to look. So what we did, instead of leaving them a pound, we cleaned their cash up.
You paid them back.
We traded off the far east of Maryland. They won't find it. Well, they built a cabin right below Healy there, over toward the little lake. So
that's where Otto's Lake is today, then.
I don't know what's in there now. Mm-hmm. So they'd got a little of this stuff before. They'd raided the cache down along the Nenana there. They left a big cache the government did. But we knew that they'd raided that, Tom, and Tom knew it. So he worked the rabbit foot on them. He went in first and had the talk with them. They had built them a nice little cabin. And his story was, they'd come over from our cabin on sanctuary with a short of gun. Tom's story to them said, well, now, fellas, I want to tip it off. Now, this Miller is a spy. He's looking out for this government stuff. And if you fellas got any of it, there's just one way to tie his hand. You divide the grub with me, and I'll divide with him. Now, he's just as guilty. He'd be just as guilty as you are. And doggone if he didn't fall for it. And they loaded the dumb up for him, pushed on and taken more and more and more. And finally, I come along, Tom was all loaded to go. Well, then we stayed over there, but I'll show you the Indian. We fared our grub, and we figured, well, we had about 2 weeks more grub. We could stay there long and hot. And along about 3 o'clock in the morning, now that was the next morning, and we figured it before one today. The next morning, I heard an unusual noise in the cabin. It was dark in there. He had a candle going, but he was sneaking around. And fire going, he was cooking. I said, what the heck is coming off here? Well, he said, I got to thinking it over, and he said, there'll be enough grub for you to stay here for so many days. And he said, I just thought I'd leave you the grub and pull out. The dirty son of a gun, you know, the Indian, he was going to leave me over there alone as a partner, you see. Well, that was Tom. Well, that was the deal on Mr. Tom Savage, of course. I come back with him, but we had a heck of a time of getting out of there, crossing that Nenana. When we got down there to Fisher's Roadhouse, that whole country was flooded. We was wading in water, putting it at our knees, and all looking for crossing. There was ice on the main Nenana there, but it was flooded all over the flat around. And it was dark, dim moonlight. We looked there for an hour, finding a possible bridge across that Nenana. Yeah, we didn't have any grub. We stayed there. We lived on rabbits for 2 days getting out of there. We finally found a little bridge that wasn't over 4 feet wide, and I don't think it was 6 feet. See, the water was going up from both sides and over that ice. And Tom said, by guys, we'll have to take a chance. And man, talk about scared. We expected that little bridge to go, but we made her. Mm-hmm. That's the Tom Savage. Of course, I was coming back that fall. I took a job with Deputy Marshal over at Livengood. I had a lot of experience with Tom Savage.
You know, he had a family of about eight. They're all grown up and married now, and he's gone.
The mother and one of the daughters was here a few years ago, right after, a year after he died.
Mm-hmm.
Well, he was a half Indian and half Finn.
Half Finn, that's right.
And half of one of those, the state of Washington Indians. I don't know what they're called.
It was the Snohomish tribe.
Yeah,
I know the tribe.
You know, I knew him in Dawson. He freighted, he drove Rouse and Rand's freight team. They had six or eight mule teams there, and Tom was the dandy with mules. And then the whiskey was all in cases, and this fancy whiskey, they got the finest you could buy, you know, in Dawson, American whiskey. Well, those bottles, you know, Tom took out a load of that stuff out on the creek. Anytime he wanted to drink a whiskey, he'd take a nail and drive through the wooden case, you know, and up into a bottle and kept the whiskey in the bottle. And he was never short of whiskey. If maybe there's a bottle or two or three bottles, they always figured, well, it was broken as it was. See, in the case, there's no complaint at all, but Tom always had plenty of whiskey when he was afraid. That's one of the tricks. He was a foxy son of a gun.
When I was fooling around trapping at Lignite in later years, when he's getting about 75 years old, he used to come and see me once in a while.
Oh boy, he was a tough individual, mm-hmm. That Tom was. But a fine man of the hills, a wonderful shot.
He could live off the country.
He had those Indian tricks.
Mm-hmm.
He never got over that. But the idea of, you know, running away from fighting and all, he figured that was all right, perfectly all right. It wasn't to get rid of me at all, because we got along fine.
Just not responsible.
Yeah, I told him, I said, Tom, I know a few things you've done. Now, if I get that job, and they send me after you, I'll get you. So he says you're going to have a hard time.
Yeah,
I would have, too, because Tom was a bear cat in the hills. Yeah.
Well, I know when two of those little kids of his this high would go out and kill a caribou or a moose and take a horse along and tie it on the horse and tag it in. I've seen him do it.
Yeah, he's one of the guys. That's some funny stuff. You know, he'd go out to the Indians all like this. One of the walls, you know. And they'd be out old with his 10 or 12 of them and a bunch of them monkeying and moving along. If he wanted to take a leak, you know, he'd run over to a brush and scratch right back to the range and sweat like a dog, you know. Well, so those Indian dwellers would just die, you know.
Yeah, I know what you're telling, too, because I talked to the man.
I'll tell you the truth about it.
Well, I got a whole room in my pocket here.
We had some great experiences together.
Well, thanks for that portion. He'd give his name and not let him tell that detail.
Well, we'll make it briefly, Frank, see, because you're busy.
Well, yes, of course. I really believe this place should be kept as a historical monument for two or three reasons. In my tenor, as nearly as I know, it's the oldest place that's been running steady since the first unit was put up. Now, Fritz Miller and Caspar Ellingson built the first unit here. We're still using it as a bunkhouse, and it's in fine condition. Yeah. But that was in 1896. And when Fritz built it, it was sort of, when he was here, all right, he'd wait on you. When he wasn't here, well, anybody was welcome to go in the place, you know, and help themselves. But he's built one building, which was the kitchen and dining room and bunkhouse all together, like the early cabins were built. And then it run that way till 1902. And Jay Kelly came down from Fairbanks, or from Dawson, and took it over. Fritz wasn't here at the time. He and Casper made a trip to Dawson in the fall of 1906, and I don't know where they were in and out of the camp. And this creek here was named after Fritz Miller, Miller Creek. It comes
in
right
here. That's the one that the creek's named after.
That's the one that the creek is named after. He was a prospector, and he had a brother in Juneau in the early days, George Miller, that owned the old Circle City Hotel in Juneau, which was quite a place at that time. And then Kelly came in 1902, and he moved in and put up a building out there for a store about 30 feet in front of this place. And he was going to claim the work because Fritz wasn't here at that particular time. Well, they afterwards had to take it to court to decide the ownership of the place, and there was no doubt about it being owned by Fritz Miller. And it's been carried on ever since. Then Kelly run the place, run the roadhouse, and the store and the saloon. He run the place up until 1936. And he likely made $100,000 over this place. The saloon business, of course, was a big item. And until then, why, we've had it.
Now, in order to tie in this portion you've told me, we'd like to establish, as near as we can on this map and through your memory, the location of this trail from Dawson through here to the Fairbanks area.
All right, well, I can only tell you, of course, when the water was open, the trail was on the Yukon River, and in wintertime, why, it followed the Yukon. I came down from Dawson in the fall of 1905, in December. December, I landed in Circle the 22nd of December, 1905, from Dawson. And then the trail from there was not quite where it is now, where the road is now, but it was fairly close, the road, because it was principally a winter road, and it was through the flats. Now, this present road follows along the foothills there most of the way to Circle. But the old trail, the old winter trail from Circle, went straight out to the Birch Creek. It was about 9 miles across the big lake. I don't know what direction that would make. But there are bees. But we hit the roadhouse, the Birch Creek Roadhouse at that time, or what we call the 12-mile roadhouse at that time, was about 3.5 miles below the present crossing of the road on Birch now. And then we followed up, right up alongside of Birch, up to about where the location of the road is now. instead of falling around the hills where the present road is now, we went right up through the flat.
Well, those wagons...